If I could go back in time and tell myself, hey, in 10 years, you're going to start a review by saying, you know that Coen Brothers movie, it really could have used more Channing Tatum.
Yes.
10 years ago, me would go like, who are you?
Who's Channing Tatum? Yeah. Do you know about Channing Tatum in that time? Because you were way ahead of the game.
No, he was around. He was in
10
already.
10 years ago, he must have been in Step Up, right? Yeah. He must have been so cute.
This guy loved the Step Up movies.
Step Up 3.
Those reviews. I listened to those back when I was like a child.
Aww. I would love to meet those guys someday.
They're so cool.
In fact, isn't the term charming potato at least a decade old by?
I think it is.
Wasn't that a Brian Salisbury thing?
Got it from somebody else.
I got it
from him, but I don't know where he got it.
He invented it. Copyright Brian Salisbury.
We are actually in the 10th anniversary in 2016 of Step Up.
Well, there you go.
Although arguably, we're in 11 years from Coach Carter.
Was he in Coach Carter?
I never saw
him. This is great, you guys. Are you just making a list of movies I'm going to watch this week?
It's
a Channing Fest.
Channing Fest 2016.
Tatum Tastic.
I'm burying the lead here. We are here to review Hail Caesar, which is the latest Joel and Ethan Coen screwball comedy, the first they've really done since Burn After Reading in 2008.
But isn't diverting off and talking about peripheral characters who don't really have much to do with anything, isn't that really in the spirit of the film?
How dare you? Channing made the movie.
It's in the spirit of Coen Brothers film.
It's like, it really is in this one.
How do I chew the scenery on podcasts? That's what I want to know.
Easily!
I can call Bo.
Oh!
You know, so let's go around. There's a lot of us.
That was my Bo impression.
Silence!
That was really good.
Let me talk over you.
Anyway, I'm Chris.
Richard.
Kat.
Sarah.
Elliot.
Jenny.
And yes, we're going to review Hail Caesar!
Hail!
And this is, you know, the Coen brothers doing their type of screwball comedy in the age of screwball comedies in Hollywood, with Josh Brolin playing a fixer who's basically sort of a studio assistant head, sort of, but he's the guy who has to get his hands dirty when, like, a celebrity's doing something they're not supposed to be doing, or making sure their image is just right, or everything in the film is happening the way it's supposed to be happening. And he has to deal with, constant chaos, but even more so when the star of their big high prestige picture of the year, the titular Hail Caesar,
Ben-Hur.
Ben-Hur.
No, the rope.
What? Oh, the rope.
This is the rope.
With the big star of it, George Clooney, who plays Baird Whitlock, drugged and abducted by a group of Hollywood communists, which is to say, you know, Trumbo and screenwriters.
Much better than issues. Trumbo.
And the thing is, like, to try and describe this film in terms of plot is almost kind of silly. The plot is kind of the secondary reason for this film existing.
It's more of a feeling you have.
It's really one of those. It's one of those Coen Brothers films where they're really trying to capture like more of a spirit of a time, or spirit of like these characters and what's going on. And I think in terms of trying to a comedy about the Hollywood Babylon, I think it pretty much nails it.
I feel like it tries to have it both ways is the problem. Like, they try to nail that feeling, but then they have a through line with Josh Brolin's character, which I kept on wanting to get back to, because to me that was interesting.
He's the anchor of the film, no question. I mean, like, as much as you watch this trailer and you see, my God, look at this list of stars in this thing, most of them have less than, like, 3 minutes of screen time.
I mean, Scarlett Johansson has... Johansson. I'm European, sorry. the fact that she's in it for maybe under 5 minutes, and I thought she was pretty... Actually, I thought she was kind of underused, because I really liked her.
Goes nowhere.
Yeah, what's the point?
You can go, well, here, you know, the whole point is that Josh Brolin's character is the senior producer who, as long as he keeps things running smoothly, the money man in New York isn't going to care. So his job is to make sure that everything works. But you kind of put him in this path with this subplot, and you're like, well, that happened. And it really feels that the problem for me with this film is it really felt like the Coens went, hey, we really like 1950s cinema, and we've never really done a classic dance routine from On the Town. We've never done a
Esther Williams scene.
We haven't done an Esther Williams scene ever. Nobody gets to do biblical epics anymore. Let's put a script together where we can prove that we could have done those kind of films.
But is that so wrong, though? I think it worked.
Yeah. No, actually, I mean, they can do it, but it's, you know, who cares?
I
cared.
I really was. Who cares? Because you guys, when you put your minds to it, can write taut, clever scripts where you do this kind of quasi self-indulgence,
but it was
and
like,
it goes somewhere.
But, because it's a comedy.
It was like perfect pastiche, though. That's like the essence of pastiche. It was perfect. I mean, and I think just because they can, it wasn't just because they can do it. I mean, it was an ensemble piece, right? As in, you know, each of these, you got a little snapshot into each of these like big, you know, golden age of Hollywood type movies. But I don't think it was self-indulgent. I think it worked as you know, creating a mood like we were talking about.
I'll hand you fetishistic.
I don't disagree with you. I think it was a little bit of the Coen brothers were looking through their Rolodex, like their old timey 1950s Rolodex, and they're like, let's pull out random names and see who we can put in the film.
And they have their dialing phone with a spinning dial.
Yeah, like Tilda Swinton.
Yeah.
Why were her two characters in there? Why were they?
That was really confusing.
Yeah, I was confused. It wasn't that funny.
I mean, it was Scarlett intentionally confusing.
Yeah, but the yeah. and then
yeah, this, but oh, sorry. No, I didn't.
No, you, Ellie. Go ahead.
No, well, it's saying yeah, but that's the meaning. It's sort of this. It's sort of this coverall for deficiencies in a film. It's sort of what Robert Rodriguez does, where he's like, "Well, I meant for it to be crappy."
How convenient. Yeah.
It's like, well, it's a screwball comedy. It's not, but it's like, look, if you're going to be putting forth a parody, this is basically what this is, if I'm reading it right.
Well, I mean, I don't know if I'm
parody slash homage.
It's more of an homage.
Well, even an homage, your subject matter at a base level has to be good. Because, like, when I watched the movie, I enjoyed the dance numbers on just a art level.
Which, by the way, Channing Tatum in the dance number in here.
That was the best part of the
film. Let's talk about that scene. Yeah. Can we just talk about that scene for the rest of the podcast, please?
That was another thing that bugged me, that, you know, they stuck some really clumsy effects and some stuff, and there was some CG tweaking in post where I'm like,
there was
oh no, undoubtedly
with the submarine.
Oh, the submarine.
Yeah, there was some there was some bits and pieces where you're like, the Estrelines routine, you know, the sploof of water was just like, oh god, you know. And those really felt like them trying to do set pieces to prove they could have done a film like that at the time. When they cheat like that, that really felt awkward for me. That really was that moment where I'm like, god, just commit or don't.
But how do you know that was the intention, that they were like trying to showcase bits and pieces of different types of 1950s films that they could have done?
Why do Williams routine other than to prove to cineasts that you can make that kind of film? In 2016, that is, you know,
maybe
it is kind of a...
respectfully, maybe they're not making it for cineasts.
Well, who else are they making?
They're making it for us.
Like,
the
just
audience.
For the audience that's going to... I'm not trying to be pedantic, but...
No,
like,
who apart from cineasts in 2016 is going to get an Esther Williams reference?
But here's the thing. Here's my argument. If you're making a movie, why do you have to assume they get that reference?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you there.
What's the point? Like, if you're just going to watch it let me be charitable for that. So, like, the 100,000 people who know those references, and I'm being, like, estimating high.
Yeah.
Why make a movie just to have them get that reference? They can go back and watch those movies.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's what... The Coen brothers are very referential.
Yeah,
and I think they've done referential stuff better before.
But you're making them sound like hacks is the problem.
No, no, no.
If you're only making a movie so people get the references, that's basically Family Guy.
No,
that's not... Oh, shit!
that's not hackery. Hackery is when you can't pull it off. They pull it all off competently enough, but I really just came out of this just wondering, what's the point beyond 2 hours of diversion to yet again go down the screwball? They're single-handed, well, dual-handed, attempting to resurrect the classic screwball genre.
I think I'm giving them more credit than I think you're giving them, because I'm hoping that they didn't make this just for people to get the references. I'm really hoping that they were making it.
Because I didn't get any of them.
As a sincere, like, we want to show you, this is why that golden age, even though we don't do that anymore because people's attention spans are too short, this stuff was still good at the time.
I mean, I will say that this is definitely the Coen brothers, much like Burn After Reading was, a piece of fluff for them. Mm-hmm. This was something they did because they just wanted to do
right,
it for fun.
Right, right, absolutely.
And, you know, I mean, so what? I go see all the Marvel films, and one could say, yeah, there's no deeper meaning here. This is to bring a certain niche of people a lot of joy. And this is exactly true for me for this. This but is Chris, a populist cineast
That's
film.
Exactly what I was going to say. But sorry, like, just as the thing that the film felt for me, that who actually, I don't particularly like the Coen brothers. I don't dislike them, but I'm not really a fan. I mean, I'll watch their stuff, but I don't know much about, you know, their overarching references, etc.
Sure.
I thought it was really warm-hearted and extremely enjoyable on a very superficial level. Mm-hmm. And what I disagree with a lot, especially when it comes to comedy, and, you know, there were a lot of laugh-out-loud moments that people were, like, laughing, applauding in that. And I always think that's the mark of a successful comedy, if there's laugh-out-loud moments in it with the whole audience laughing. I always think that people make the mistake of assuming that a comedy needs to mean something on a deeper level. I think this was essentially, like, it was maybe a bit self-indulgent, but it was also extremely funny and, again, charming, warm-hearted, and I think maybe sometimes that's all it needs to be.
Yeah. There is a reason this came out in February and not, you know, in December. They're not trying to make it an Oscar movie. They're not trying to make it an art piece. It's the dead of winter, even though it's like 70 degrees in Austin.
I'm wearing a vest and shorts.
Global warming is not real.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's supposed to be a fun time at the cinema, just like all those big, over-the-top dance number musicals were in the 50s. And those biblical films, which, I mean, we could pretend they have deeper meaning, but they're still just like, look how much budget we have.
Spectacle, yeah.
Yeah, it's all about the spectacle.
I will hand it to Richard, though, what you were saying about the special effects. You're absolutely right that there was totally that point where it was like the Esther Williams bit, you're like, that's some of the shoddiest CG I've ever seen, and why is there CG here at all? You know, if what you want to do is recreate those sequences. And I suspect it's because, ultimately, they had such a gigantic cast of people to pay to be in this thing at all.
You think they ran out of budget and that's the reason?
Well, and they knew, I mean, you sell the script to the studio and they're like going, well, you're not going after awards for this. And you're certainly not going to make a lot of money per box office. Mm-hmm. So
they gave it to the intern to create that.
For someone who's never seen a film that was made before 1980, what part was that?
We're going to have to change that. That was the swimming pool part with the fountain blowing up into the camera.
Yeah.
Jenny, you've said almost nothing. What's going on here?
Oh, I was just thinking about Channing Tatum some more.
Yes! Yes!
You should have been there for a magic mic.
Oh, God.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm kind of in the middle of the movie. Like, I thought it was very funny, but I think I agree. I think it is kind of a fluff piece, and I could live without it. Like, I wouldn't have minded missing this in theaters. Mm. I would have liked watching it at home on TV. I think I would have been just as fine. But I also don't plan on watching it again.
No, because, I mean, actually, one of the things about this that made me go, by the end, God, I can't wait to see this again,
really?
Is because there's a lot of overarching themes through it that cycle back around and circle, like, you know, of course, communism being a big thing and how that relates to the studio system, about religion and faith. There are all these different things that were part of this much bigger pastiche that I couldn't completely put together the first time, but that's how I am with almost every Coen Brothers film.
You want to be able to chew
where I'm like, I'm looking at all these things, and I know they're all there, and I know they're part of a deeper understanding of what they're trying to say, but I never get it the first time.
Yeah, I think the problem was that they were in there. I don't think they were just particularly well handled.
I don't think so either. I agree.
Yeah, there is a hot... There are two, in fact. In the last 10 minutes, there are two horribly clunky speeches, one of which is supposed to be clunky, and the other's just clunky.
Which
just,
one?
Josh Brolin's closing, effectively monologue to himself, about the nature of, like, it's perfectly fine to make fluff films. And I'm like, it's almost like they have to defend themselves. It almost felt like when the Farrelly brothers came out at the end of The Three Stooges and said, it's just a Three Stooges movie, please don't hate us. And I was like, really? It just really felt like they wanted their cake and eat it as well.
Well, see, I guess I didn't see that last part at all like that. I guess I just took it very much at face value of, this is a guy who's trying to decide, security versus passion.
Yeah.
And that's a classic decision, and I took it straight up as that. It's him coming to terms with, it's okay to do something you're passionate about, even if it sort of sucks.
Yeah. I love that.
You guys are looking into it, I think, a little bit too deeply, because it's, you know, the Coen brothers, and we should be looking at it more deeply, but maybe they just wanted to make something silly.
I don't think that the Coen brothers make a film about the studio system with references to writers as communists, gossip columnists of the era, and gay scandals. Without that, that's the way they write. They write at that certain level of depth. It's like, you know, you go from something like Inside Llewellyn Davis, which I wasn't a huge fan of, but I think it was intellectually more cohesive, and the in jokes worked better. And I think the in jokes just don't land.
Before we move off the in jokes, I can just say one of the most annoying things about this movie wasn't actually the movie, like sitting in a room with a bunch of critics who are each trying to prove how many of the references they get by how loud they fucking laugh and how much they clap was annoying as shit.
Damn
and
right.
Just like,
agreed.
Jesus Christ, I get it. You fucking know the movies. Here's a fucking cookie.
I'm going to clap.
Jesus
Who was
Christ.
Jesus Christ?
I'm clapping.
They never actually showed his
face.
It just
sounded like Tobey Maguire.
It did sound like Tobey Maguire.
You want to talk about a weird casting in this movie that you'll have no idea who it was? Remember in the distance you see a submarine commander and it's kind of space.
Yeah.
You know who that was?
What? Oh my God.
Dolph Lundgren.
Oh!
Oh my God, I'm so happy about that.
And then why wouldn't you show his face? That's like one of the best in-jokes of the whole film.
Because Daniel Craig was a stormtrooper.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That makes me happy too.
The other problem is that they have one of the best scenes early on, and it's when they're trying to get approval from three priests and a rabbi.
Oh, that's a great scene, yeah.
The script for Hail Caesar, the film within the film. And it's so good.
It's really
it's
witty.
It's so tight. Yeah. And
Robert Picardo.
Just goes, why am I even here?
Yeah.
Who cares about the Nazarenes?
But I don't have an opinion.
He
needs to be the most argumentative the whole time. The end, they come around to final thoughts for them. And he's like, no, I don't have an opinion.
And he's like,
passive aggressive. It's so beautifully done that that's the moment where I think they hit the if they're just going for a fluff screwball comedy, they hit it so perfectly in that everything else that just kind of feels just wispy and disappearing off over the hills, not really clear how it. I mean, I like the idea of them doing a you know, just on the surface screwball comedy, perfectly fine. I don't think they do it here. I'm not sure they were trying to do it here, and if they were, they sure as hell don't manage it.
Well, there's no question this is a lighter fare for them as far as they're concerned. They're doing this because this is something they always wanted to do.
And after that, the funniest thing is George Clooney, who just hams.
He killed it. He was so good.
He was so hammy.
He was perfect.
When is he
not, like, hamming up a screen?
He's almost satirizing himself.
You know, exactly.
You know, thinking about this movie, it feels like I just watched an anthology and less a movie.
Yeah.
It feels
like
I watched like six different Saturday Night Live skits done very well, but just not knitted together. And I'm like, okay, well, they could have easily just cut it up. Like, here's the Hail Caesar bit. Here's the communists. They're going to sort of interact. They're going to cross over characters. Here's the Scarlett Johansson bit that doesn't cover anything.
She doesn't make any sense to the movie. You could have cut her story out and I would have seen the same movie.
Well, that's the thing is, like, they're like 50% of this film you could have cut out and it wouldn't have anything to do with the plot. But like I said, I don't really think that this is a movie that's about the plot.
But most of the characters tie in together at the end, except Scarlett Johansson and Jonah Hill. Especially Jonah Hill.
Jonah Hill,
who, by the way, all the big name actors in here, is one of the people with like the little circle on the poster for
Scarlett Johansson.
He's in it for less than anybody else in this whole
movie. He's got like about literally a minute
and
he's
got about
two
six lines or something.
Why was he on the poster for this?
Because he's recognizable, right?
Yeah, but everybody's recognizable.
Why he is over movie. Ray Fiennes?
Yeah, Ray Fiennes.
I think a certain demographic see Jonah Hill and are like, oh, great, okay, it's that.
Exactly.
And they're like, Ray Fiennes, Voldemort.
Yeah, right.
See, I think that scene, the Ray Fiennes,
that was so
the director's
good.
Scene,
that was
the best
scene.
Like, yeah, where he's trying to deal with this cowboy
hilarious.
Star.
Hilarious. He can't speak at all.
This guy,
he was Toby Doyle.
Alden Ehrenreich.
I loved him.
He was so cute. And after just like Channing in terms Tatum. Of like, yeah, after, of course. I liked it when they were on, I liked it on, when they were on the screen together. That was great.
He plays a cowboy star for the studio who they're trying to mold into a different type of actor. So they put him in like a proper, like a
British a comedy British, of manners.
Yeah, comedy of manners. And he cannot do the
Merrily We Dance. I totally see that. I'd watch the shit out of that, guys.
Give a mirthless smile.
A mirthless chuckle.
You should be rueful. It's like, what the fuck?
See that you have mirthless.
I mean, I understand. I can totally understand, Richard, where you're coming from, in the sense that like this doesn't feel very cohesive. I wouldn't say that's uncommon for Coen Brothers films.
I think what is that an excuse?
It's uncommon.
Well, it's got nothing to do with being an excuse. It's the types of films they make.
But I think this feels like it lacks cohesion to the point where it actually feels it's falling apart from its center. It almost feels in some sequences like they couldn't get the cast back on certain days, and they had to do hurried rewrites to explain why people were not present.
Well, maybe which is kind of like the spirit of the movie.
It's just meta. They meant for it to be like this.
Yeah.
Let's go to final thoughts here. Sarah, why don't you start us off?
Why did I have to start? I barely talked. I enjoyed it. I don't think this warrants much like digging in terms of some sort of deeper meaning. It's funny. I agree with Jenny that it would probably be better to watch, like, on a lazy afternoon. Just, I want to put something on. I don't want to really think that deeply about anything. But I also want to be slightly challenged in my mirthless chuckles. So, I feel like my biggest problem with it is I feel like they cast it first, and then they're like, let's write a movie around this. And yeah, maybe they had to write around people's schedules. Maybe Scarlett Johansson couldn't be there every day, so they made her a minor-ish character. Yet the subplot was somehow important. I don't know. So I'm going to give it 7... Forgotten Coen Brothers out of 10.
Is there a third one?
There are 7 of them.
Are there actually?
Actually, there are 10.
Well, yes. Seriously?
So I give 7 out of 10.
Okay, I don't even know if this is true or not.
Snow White and the 8 Coen Brothers.
Elliot?
I enjoyed segments of this movie, and I really enjoyed Josh Brolin's part. Like, it's the only reason I could even get through this movie, because, like, if it wasn't for his part, I would have walked out. Like, I just couldn't deal with this movie. To me, it doesn't really stitch together well. Maybe they're trying for an overarching theme, but the only real heart of the movie that I could see was this guy conflicted about choosing between security and passion. That's the only thing that came back to me. So I've talked a lot. So for all those reasons, I got to give this 3 film rolls out of 10.
Whoa.
Wow. That's harsh.
I thought you liked it better than that.
Yeah, interesting.
Fuck you, Elliot.
They have jackets that say that. It's really nice.
We'll make a t-shirt.
Fuck you, Elliot. Yeah, I'm kind of with I'm with Sarah on this one, as always, because otherwise she hurts me if I don't agree with her.
I totally believe that.
Oh, yeah, well.
Rolling up my sleeve right now.
Yeah. God, cringing. I liked it. Like I said, I came to this as kind of not particularly... This is going to sound weird. I dislike comedies, actually, kind of. I don't have no sense of humor, but I don't like comedy movies. I just wouldn't go see one at the cinema, put it that way. Like, unless... I don't even know.
Unless Chris is getting you in for free.
Yeah, Chris is like looking at me intensely like, I can't believe you. No, I don't know. It's just not the genre of choice for me. I much prefer TV series, you know.
Life is suffering.
Yeah, exactly. Chris, I like to have an intellectual challenge when I go to the cinema, okay? Jeez. Okay. No, I'm kidding.
No problem.
But, no,
we're
going to
see Transformers when it comes
Yay!
Out.
Yay! Okay, how do they transform? Sorry, just to wrap up my thoughts on this one. So anyway, coming to this as someone who doesn't particularly like comedy movies, definitely does not like screwball comedies, and doesn't really like the Coen Brothers, I still thought it was okay. And, you know, all that negativity versus, you know, this. It was good. I laughed multiple times. I thought the performances individually were great. Even the kind of more minor characters definitely all added, you know, the je ne sais quoi to the finished product. I again, would not, I think this doesn't really stand up to very heavy interpretation. And I was actually kind of worried coming, because this is my second podcast ever. And I was kind of like, oh, what am I going to say about this? Because I thought I was saying in the cards there, it was funny and I liked it, basically. So, I don't know. Again, based on all those things I just said, I would probably give it, let's see, 7 out of 10 mirthless chuckles.
Richard?
Ha ha.
Ha.
God, I spent the entirety of this going, Steve Martin would have done such a better job with very
He's
much
not
the
in the Rolodex.
Hush.
I'm kind of surprised he hasn't worked with
you've had your
brothers.
Thoughts. Yeah,
this, I guess he's too big of a jerk.
Well, he doesn't want to.
You've
I mean,
had
like,
your thoughts,
I, unless you're going to pay him in art, he's not going to turn up. I don't know. This felt like the Coen brothers at their most self-indulgent. And they're such great filmmakers that they can pull off a big, sloppy, sprawling, loaded with stars, visually ambitious film without trying. That's what they do, because they're great filmmakers. And yet, this just felt like they'd either overthought a trivial idea or underthought a much more complicated idea. It just wanders to no effect, wastes so many good ideas. And like I said, these guys can't make a bad film. Then you could give them brain damage and they would still turn out something better.
Intolerable Cruelty was pretty bad.
It's not Uwe Boll that bad. That's
no,
what we're
well, no.
We're talking about, the ability
make
to make
a horrible
a, to make a piece, a piece of incompetent film.
True.
So then you have to judge it by their ability to put something together that is complicated and interesting and sprawling and weird and fun. And it just wasn't fun. If they were aiming for screwball comedy, they didn't do it. If they were aiming for something which is loaded with winks and nods, it's all winks and nods and why. This, for me, is... I'm going to be a little kinder than Elliot on this, but this is four... limp, cold spaghetti lassos out of 10.
It's pronounced lasso.
Which is by you colonials.
We pronounce it lasso in the UK, just to back him up there.
I think it's like an Italian word. I don't know.
An Italian word.
An Italian, which is a joke ripped from Inglourious Basterds. Okay. But, like, I can't really say anything that hasn't already been said. I'm in between on this movie. Like, I liked it and I enjoyed watching it, but there are parts of it where I feel like were unnecessary. There are characters I would have liked to dive into more, and I didn't get to see them as much as I wanted to. Like, I thought that Mr. Cowboy, I can't think of his name
Hobart?
Right now. Hobart. And his date, I thought they were really adorable, but they only last for, like, maybe 5 minutes on screen, and then things go back to the communists, which I thought also was a very fascinating line. But they didn't dive into it enough for me to make me feel really invested in the movie. So, in the end, Channing Tatum was hot.
Yes.
What else? I can't say much else.
We saw his butt.
Did we?
It was in, like,
it was in pants.
His nice sailor
pants.
Outfit adds another star. I'm going to give it 8.
Like, watch Lip Sync Battle instead. You'll see a lot more Channing.
Yes! Anyway, sorry.
I would give it 6... Tap Dancing Tatums out of...
Yes. Best rating
the name
of the last
band.
Year.
Tap Dancing Tatums. Jenny, do you want to start a band?
Okay.
Tap
there.
Dancing Tatums.
I do think this is like definitely one of their bigger pieces of fluff, as I said before. This is them doing a film because they just want to do it. They're like, I want to make a film with featuring all these classic Hollywood things. And yes, Elliot, I am one of those guys who recognized all those references.
But you didn't make it a point.
I didn't make a point of like doing Robert De Niro and Cape.
But there were people doing that.
There was a large gentleman at the front who not only was like, ha ha, but he clapped every time.
Well,
I was like,
terrible.
Could you
I
not?
The guy sitting next to me. Yeah.
Oh dear, I'm sorry, friend.
Okay.
No, I was looking
that was me, Cass?
Oh, sorry, Sarah.
I was watching Harry Knowles do that constantly, applauding at every little bit he got the reference to. And I was like, dude, seriously, I get you're having joy.
Wait,
but
maybe you're talking about Harry Knowles.
Like, why are you calling attention to yourself?
Can you guys have, like, hardcore film enthusiasts have, like, a little flag system where they put up a little flag where they get the reference and it's just silent, like a little red flag. Yep.
That's the neckbeard clapping when Stan Lee comes into a Marvel movie. We know he's going to be in there. You don't need to clap for him.
It's like,
we all know what he looks like now.
I get the joy. I don't get the let's irritate everyone else in the theater around you because you have to point out that you got it.
Well, it's an ego thing. It's like, look how much I know.
Well, exactly. him.
But I got those jokes and I liked those jokes.
And that's
fine. I found it very entertaining on that level.
Chris, you should fight that dude.
Yeah. Fight a guy in a wheelchair. Yeah.
I'm going to hand the match to Chris. Absolutely.
Talk about good sight hits.
Never start a fight. You don't know you can't win.
And I really think, I'm thinking about this, and it like has some pretensions of like the bones of a plot feel like they want to go the direction of a noir like send up, mm-hmm. but it never really does. There is a 50s Big Lebowski movie hidden deep inside yes. this somewhere that would have made this a genuinely great film. And it's
that's
not,
just like your opinion.
And it's not exactly.
That's your problem.
Is.
That's how you wanted to see it, Chris.
And it's not a genuinely great film. It is merely a good film, but one that like appealed to my interests. Mm. I found it kind of, despite being indeed somewhat more than just a little bit unstructured and all over the place, just kind of delightful, yeah. you know? The best parts are when you're watching the movies they're actually making. Mm-hmm. Like, once again, full kudos to Channing Tatum doing a big yes. dance number with lots of homosexual overtones in it.
I enjoyed that part. No dames. Hashtag no dames.
And him jumping onto a submarine and, like, doing it, like...
like Mikhail Baryshnikov in his prime.
More flair than I've ever seen anyone do anything in my life.
I want to see the outtake because you know he had to fall at least once.
But I,
no!
I've never heard Sarah laugh that loudly at anything. Like, I was just like, whoa!
That was the biggest laugh of the film for me. Yeah. I personally got a lot of joy out of this thing, even though while realizing the whole time, wow, this could have been a lot better than it is. But... hell, I felt like it was kind of made for me at the same time. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give it on a very personal level. 8 out of 10 Channing Tatum voguing at the camera.
Yes! Oh, Chris, yours is the best little rating thing.
Come on,
yes.
I just tell you, like, just as a reviewer, like, I'm very proud of the fact that all of our ratings, like, sort of ran the gambit. Like, there wasn't, like, you know, groupthink. People's like, no, this is my opinion, and we support, like, this is a good... I'm putting too big of a halo on this. Like, this is a good review.
Nobody ever accused our side of not all generally disagreeing with Elliot.
Because there's a lot of I was going to say,
you can't go wrong doing that.
Actually, I'm going to look at the deeper meaning of this review on a second listening.
Because there's a lot of interpersonal hatred, so that's why everyone's reviews are all over the place, because I just want to disagree with certain people. Yeah.
They were trying to do something else, and they didn't succeed.
Yeah. They were trying to do a review. They failed.
So we thought Brian would guest star, but it just didn't happen.
Yeah. Abby just would have said, hi, and that would have been it.
Just comes in, charming potato.